Okay, this is talking with Dr. David Seehaug at the IRC meeting in Washington, D.C. on 14 August 1981. Before we come to your radio astronomy, can you just tell me what your educational background was and so forth?
Okay, well, I was in the Second World War in the Canadian Army in the radar game, and then went to did undergraduate work at the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario, and then went on to McGill for a PhD, leaving there in 1953.
In what field was the PhD?
Radio physics. And went directly down to Holmdel, Bell Laboratories. So that very briefly is...
Right. And you worked at Bell Laboratories right through till the discovery of the microwave background?
Yes, and well
right.
beyond
and
that.
And well beyond, right. So
yes.
You know the whole atmosphere
yes.
of that time. Now, you also did some work on, even at that time, you're still doing it, on propagation, the troposphere and so forth.
That is correct. Beginning in about 1955, I started doing some millimeter wave propagation up in the 60 gigahertz range using a tunable klystron and measured the oxygen attenuation in the atmosphere, that kind of thing.
Did that have any tie-in to radio astronomy, or was that pretty much just...
Well, you'll see in a moment
okay.
how it did.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we did tropospheric beyond horizon studies, too, at lower frequencies, such as 4 gigahertz.
Right.
That kind of thing. But in approaching the relevance to the radio astronomy business really started when Rudy Konfner came to me one day and...
Who?
Rudy Konfner.
I don't know that name. C-O-N...
K.
K.
O-M-P. F-N-E-R. Konfner.
Konfner, okay.
Yes, he was our boss while all of this was going on.
Okay.
So he came to me, and he and John Pierce, J.R. Pierce, I presume you know
yes,
him, do you?
Right.
They worked hand in glove, those two, and felt, of course, Arthur Clarke, some years earlier, had been in sort of a science fiction mode,
right.
Said that it may be possible to do some communications via satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And John Pierce and Rudy Konfner saw that that was a good thing to really think about. And so this was in about 1958, as I recall. That
Post-Sputnik?
Yes, Sputnik had already
right.
gone up. But Konfner came to me and he said he had just seen a remarkable thing at Murray Hill, namely the solid-state maser working at 6 gigahertz that had been built by Eric Scoville and Bob deGrasse, and others, of course, and that this had a noise temperature of some 10 to 12 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now, if we're going to go into satellite communications, we need really sensitive receiving systems, and can you tell us what contribution the troposphere is going to produce? And
right.
he naturally came to me because I had had this experience in absorption by oxygen and water vapor and this kind of thing.
Right.
So I went ahead and calculated that and in fact published it. I think the publication is 1959 in the Journal of Applied Physics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of the
okay.
month now, but it's back there. So that was published.
At that specific frequency was the interest. 6 gigahertz?
Well, no, over the whole band, I published it for different viewing or different elevation
mm-hmm.
angles, all the way, I think, from half a gigahertz to 40, the whole set of curves.
So you were trying to find an optimum frequency also? Or
this is what
yeah.
was part of the game, and of course, Jansky and others previously had their results showed that the galactic noise came down, coming from the low frequencies. And so, right, we're looking for optimum. And that was eventual input into the satellite
mm-hmm.
satellite communications. Okay, so that was published. And then the next step was to put together a system to measure this. And this is where the solid-state maser comes in,
mm-hmm.
of course. And that happened to be built at 6 gigahertz, which was fine. And so what we did, Crawford and myself and others, decided to turn the horn reflector on its side, and this was about a 4-foot aperture horn reflector, turn it on its side so that we'd have a nice low transmission line into a little building where the amplifier would be situated.
Yes.
And indeed we did that. And made our measurements, and these were done by tipping curves.
Right.
And determined, in fact, what the contribution of the troposphere was, therefore, to the overall noise.
Are you talking about the same study that was published in 59 or a subsequent?
No, this was then published in the readings of the National Noise Conference, the one in Chicago.
Those things, right.
The one in Chicago. That publication is in there. And that's, there are four authors on that, DeGrasse, myself, Ed Ohm, and Derek Scoville.
Four now what? That, of course, the antenna was...
So we're looking at the radiation patterns of the antenna, which had been measured all around 360 degrees, so you could calculate the contribution from the Earth into that
right.
thing, and the backload was so low, it was just perfect.
Right, and what size antenna was this?
That was about a 4-foot aperture, bare metal. Kinds of directions. So John shakes
hands. Hello, John.
Well, I've just spent a year at Cambridge, but
I'm not quite sure
how he comes into Bell Labs here.
Okay, well you're going to get the message in a moment here.
Okay.
So John, I knew John quite well, and indeed, he set up a paraboloid and rather carefully put things together with a good amplifier and repeated the experiment that we had over at the Mueller Observatory.
At the same frequency, roughly?
No. What frequency was he? It was microwave.
Yeah, higher frequency, I don't know.
No, I've forgotten right now what it was, but it's published in Nature.
Okay.
And indeed, he came up with a very strong article in Nature saying, no, this the measurement from theory from Bell Lab is correct, mm-hmm. is indeed correct. So that that bolstered
right.
things. We were sure of it anyway, felt sure. At that time, with the 6 gigahertz system, there was something wrong before we published the paper in the National Electronics Conference proceedings, because we had considerable argument about whether their measurement of the noise temperature of the maser, or whether my estimate and Ed Ohm's estimate also of the noise in the antenna were correct, because when we added up what we thought was correct, we got something lower than we measured.
Mm-hmm.
We should have got 16 and we measured 18 or mm-hmm. something like
yeah.
that. So we said, well, okay, the accuracies are not good enough. And so we just sort of left it at that. Now, then Project Echo began.
Which was, can you just describe what it was?
Project Echo was 100 foot, 50 foot. Metalized sphere that was put up in orbit 150 miles over the Earth.
Right.
And that was therefore a passive reflector, and the purpose was that we would do transmit to JPL, that was at about that frequency, 900 megahertz or so, to Goldstone, and
mm-hmm.
they would transmit 2300, bounce it back off the balloon back to Holmdel.
Mm-hmm.
And for that job, Art Crawford built what we call the 20-foot horn, and that again is a pyramidal horn reflector of the 20-foot aperture. And the job of putting that together was taken on by Ed Ohm. Now again, Scoville built, or he and his group built, a solid-state maser at 2300 megahertz.
Right, but now you said Crawford and Scoville together built
No. Crawford built the antenna.
Yes.
The pyramidal horn reflector antenna.
I'm sorry, it was Ohm and I didn't.
Okay, let me
two people
let
built
me,
it.
Let me just give
right,
you this
okay.
in order.
Say it again.
Crawford built the antenna per se.
Yes.
He did a construction job and so on. I measured it electrically, the gain, and make sure everything was okay there. And this is all in the ECHO, BSTJ ECHO, Project ECHO issue, special issue on Project ECHO.
Special issue of what?
Project ECHO.
Yeah, of what journal, though?
Was it Bell System Technical Journal.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, that's a full issue on that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a publication in there on the antenna per se, and okay, let me do it in this order now. Scoville and his group built the Maser.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought down to Crawford Hill and put in the cab of the antenna, 2300 megahertz, and Ed Ohm was the one who put that whole thing together and added the rest of the receiver onto it. So Ed was sort of the one to put it all together.
Why now, the lower frequency than what you had before?
Oh, simply because for Project ECHO, these two frequencies were agreed upon as being the suitable frequencies for the job.
That's true. That was a NASA frequency also, I guess.
That probably influenced to some extent.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, I guess they still use that thing.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, Ed put things together very carefully. He's a very careful engineer, really good job. And along with all of that, he did, again, tipping curves and so on to look at the atmosphere, and everything turned out as it had before. Everything was just fine compared with the theory and so on. But again, he came up with overall noise figures that were 2 degrees or more, I think it was 2.2 was his average actually, below what he measured.
Mm-hmm.
when he added up all his components. Very careful. And in his article, again in that ECHO issue, there's an article in the table where he gives his results, mm-hmm, with the errors, best estimate.
Right. And what
kind of thing?
What roughly was the total error estimated here?
I believe it was getting toward 1 degree. I'd have to look it up, mm-hmm, something like that. But he sort of had 2.2 plus or minus 1.
Yeah, 2 sigmas or anything.